This is The Topic is Trek, episode 94, for Friday, June 25th, 2021. Coming up in this episode, more Trek is on the way, promise, Vulcan, Alberta, Canada news. Captain Archer tells the Vulcans to kindly step aside. All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. It's your turn to take Porthos for a spacewalk. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. And hello, everyone, and welcome to another thrill-packed episode of The Topic is Trek. I am one of your co-hosts, Clinton, and beaming in to join me, as always, first of all, is Mr. Craig Stepp. Oh, well, that's close enough, I guess.
He's on mute.
Come on.
Nicely done, Craig. Zoom moment of the week right there. Just never right. Mind. Don't even repeat it. Save it next week.
Beam me back in.
Go ahead. Beam him back in.
Oh, sorry. It was this one.
Ow. I'm.
Okay. Get in here.
What we got.
You sure these things are safe?
What we got back wasn't human.
Okay. What we sent wasn't necessarily all that human to begin with, so it's okay. And also beaming in to join me.
All right, forget it. I won't deliver any of my lines in.
It's Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I walked Porthos last time, and make sure you clean up after him, because the Andorians did not like what you left behind last time.
I thought it was going to burn up on reentry. What? I didn't know.
Jeez. Take this poop space bags.
Although Phlox can probably turn that into something.
I'm sure.
They can feed that stupid bat.
Well, it's not stupid if it saves you. It's important to note that.
Keep your mind open to new ideas, Captain.
Well, belated happy Picard Day to both of you.
How belated are we?
We're very belated on that. It was belated a while ago.
Happy first contact day then, too.
Yeah, well, okay, we're going back a little too far at that point. But we did get that new trailer for Picard on Picard Day.
Did you get a trailer hitch on your truck?
No. No, this was an actual trailer that showed more than just shots with no people in it. We actually had shots with people and action, yes, and things going on in there and Q showing up and Seven of Nine not being Seven of Nine and all sorts of wackiness. So it looks like we have another possible time travel or time skipping.
Alternate reality. Slingshot around the moon. Save the whales.
Yeah. No. Yes. Yes. So we will have to see what comes of that. And we have a story coming up, perhaps sooner or later. John DeLancey will let us all know before we even get that far. But
we're gonna have him on the show, right?
Yes, we're definitely definitely gonna have John DeLancey on the show. I've got a crack team of people working on that right now.
We're crack, okay. All right.
Our producers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They're worth every penny we pay them.
That's right.
All right, but while you're waiting for John DeLancey to show up on the show, and that may be a while, so sit back because we're going to open up Subspace Chatter with some news stories, as long as it's okay with Charlie. Charlie, you all set with Subspace Chatter?
I'm fine with that.
You don't need all that Subspace Chatter?
Well, I got a yes and a no going back and forth there, so I'm going to go with the yes. So while we're still waiting for the start of season 2 of Star Trek Lower Decks, that comes out on August 12th. So we're getting close to that first one there.
Yeah.
In the meantime, here are a few updates on three other Trek shows in the works. Craig, tell us about the first one.
All right. So 2 weeks ago, director Amanda Rowe tweeted out that some exciting news. She wrote, "This is not a drill. I am currently directing Star Trek." Well, there you go. So Rowe was on the set directing episode 8 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Rowe has directed episodes of several TV series, including Shadowhunters.
Although Showrunners would be an interesting story.
Shadowhunters, Doom Patrol, The 100, and Nancy Drew. In her tweet about her latest gig, Rowe included a photo that seems to have become a tradition. She included a picture of the clapboard, which they still use, and it's digital, from the shoot.
And I'm still nervous about the fact that they've copied our treatment of how to use the Delta Shield.
We need to sue CBS.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. We didn't have the little elongated star on our Delta Shield.
Well, that's true. That's true. It's totally different.
But yeah, obscuring that, you know,
I think we didn't have that, so we didn't get in trouble. Exactly. You know, they just kind of stole from us. One day we're going to see Anson Mount. How you doing? Our shirt's going to look have the logo on it.
Ours is more of a shark fin.
Yeah.
All right, well, Jaws or Bruce, what's next up on the updates?
Oh, was that a reference to me?
Yes.
Sure, I'll go ahead. Meanwhile, filming also continues on Star Trek Picard, as do random hijinks. Series executive producer and co-showrunner Terry Metalas, I hope that's close enough.
Metalas.
Cialis?
Yes. Wait, call your doctor.
No.
Well, anyway, Terry posted an image of actor John DeLancey sitting in a captain's chair in Metalas's office, along with the caption, "He just keeps sneaking into my office to sit in the chair." That's because he's omnipotent. He can blink in anywhere you want. Well, DeLancey himself has become the cast member most likely to give away secrets about Picard. So far, he has let slip that the show is actually filming seasons 2 and 3 back to back, and that both Jonathan Frakes and Brent Spiner have been on set. While Frakes may simply be back to direct episodes of the show, DeLancey said this about Spiner. Can I use reverb on this?
Sure. Yeah. Use some nice Q reverb.
Use the power of DeLancey.
"I've got a great scene with Data this coming Tuesday."
Wow.
It was worth it, folks. It was worth it. With the release. Hey, you don't get that on.
It was our budget for the year, by the way, on that quote. So there you go. Totally cha-ching. Worth it.
There you go.
You don't get that on the pod directive.
Sorry, Larry.
With the release of the latest teaser trailer for Picard, we know that season 2 will deal with some aspect of time travel or an alternate timeline. That could mean that the encounter with Data happens while he is still serving aboard Enterprise D. Time will tell.
Which time is it? I see what you did there.
If they do seasons 2 and 3 back to back, very Back to the Future like.
Yes, yes. That's quite a long shoot, too, because that's so now we're talking about 20 episodes that they're.
Mm-hmm. Hey, it'll be just like the good old days when they did 26 in a season of TNG.
Or back in the older days when a season of a show would be about 35 or 40 episodes.
Or I was gonna say like Gunsmoke, it went like all year long almost.
Whoa, let's not get crazy.
Okay. All right. We'll try to hone that in here.
By the way, I will add, John DeLancey's looking pretty good for 73.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, because he's omnipotent and all-knowing. And
he just snap his fingers every year.
That's right.
As is Gates McFadden.
Yes.
All right. Well, and Star Trek Discovery has finally locked some of their season 4 episodes. Now, that means that the live-action portion of the episode has been filmed and an edit of the episode has been okayed. But don't get your hopes up too high because the episode still has a long way to go to be ready to be streamed. The color in all the shots needs to be adjusted to be consistent. Music has to be scored and added. Dialogue may have to be re-recorded. Audio effects added. And of course, lots and lots of visual effects have to be designed, rendered, and added to those live shots. All that said, when recently asked about the premiere date for Discovery, co-showrunner Michelle Paradise replied, "In terms of an air date, I don't know. The teaser trailer says 2021, so we'll go with that." So firmer words have never been spoken about when your show is going to air than, well, you know, that's what it says. So for now, well, sure, why not?
I read it on the internet, so it must be true.
It must be true.
Britney Spears people were tweeting about it.
No, let's not go there. So far, really the only thing we actually have a premiere date for is Lower Decks, which seems to be the only show that has their act so much together that they can give you the air date and then just keep moving on to do their next season while you're waiting for that season to show up. So
there's a lot of post-production to a lot of these shows. It's crazy. It makes you, the actors probably, like when Doug Jones didn't have to wear makeup for a couple episodes, he went, "Yes, this is going to be a quick day." Can we just film on that back lot and do like a Spectre of the Gun thing again?
Yeah, exactly. Because that's how you save time and money. But no, I think we all acknowledge the fact that you look at these episodes of the shows that they're putting out now, and you're pretty much looking at feature film stuff going on in these hour-long episodes. Yep. So the amount of time it takes to get all that stuff put together, especially when you realize how few actual things are on the set and how much is just put in as special effects afterwards. Although this season, I believe they are using their version of what they use on The Mandalorian that they call the volume.
Yes.
Which is the wraparound screen.
Very impressive.
You can have your virtual environment that you can interact with, and you don't have to do it in post. It's right there at the time of shooting the episode. Yeah, it is expensive. I'm assuming that it
impressive
pays for itself eventually.
Yeah.
That you're able to, the time you're saving on other effects work that would have to be done to make that happen is worth it in the end.
You know, they had a, they had a behind the scenes, sorry, getting choked up here. A behind the scenes, I don't know if I can talk about it now, episode with all the directors of The Mandalorian. And then one of the episodes did focus on the volume, that whole thing with the screen. It was super impressive. And it would just, I could see where that would be so much better than a stupid green screen. Right, trying to act with it. You can see
it's a benefit for the actors.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can see the mountain in the distance, or you can see whatever they put around you. It's pretty awesome.
Getting a little off track, boys.
And it kept perspective too, where the camera is at.
Right. And I'm thinking though, what I don't know is in Discovery, if you have, say, if they had that for last season, right? And you have the Gormagander sailing through the sky. Would you have rendered all of that ahead of time, or are you putting in something really basic and you're still having to go in afterwards and add more stuff on top of that? It's like, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I know they're seeing the basics, but I'm guessing they probably still have to do work after that on all those scenes too.
I'm sure it's a 4K screen they're using.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
the view screen in the front of the ship is really, they only had time to render the basics. It's an 8-bit.
It's a 640 by 480 screen. Yes, exactly. The pixels are the size of trucks.
Like Yar's Revenge on the Atari.
Ensign Detmer, can you increase the resolution?
I can't.
Lieutenant Detmer. Sorry.
I can't. All right, well, let's move on to talk about something that looks like it's really well rendered.
Got better resolution in my right eye. All right, recently we had our first look at the young crew that will be featured in the new animated series, Star Trek Prodigy. Now we know who will be providing the voices of these characters. We think the two characters who are the most human in appearance, Gwyn and Dahl, will be the crew leaders. Gwyn, a 17-year-old Vau Nakot, will be voiced by Ella Purnell. And Purnell was most recently seen in Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead. Dahl, also 17 years old,
but from an unidentified species, will be played by Brett Gray, who also appears in Netflix series On My Block. The resident Tellarite, Giancom Pog, will be voiced by Jason Mantzoukas, and Mantzoukas, who sports curly black hair and a thick beard, has recently been a featured player on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Good Place, and has voiced characters on Big Mouth, Housebroken, and American Dad, among others. Next, Murph, the indestructible blob with an insatiable appetite for ship parts, will be voiced by D. Bradley Baker. Baker was most recently heard as the voice of the clone troopers on Star Wars The Bad Batch, and several Muppets on the Muppet Babies reboot. Angus Imrie will voice Zero, the Medusan who wears a containment suit for the protection of others. Imrie portrayed a young Prince Edward in the series The Crown and was featured in the BBC Four series The Archers. Rounding out the team is Riley, Alazraki.
Alcatraz.
She will voice Roktok, the gargantuan Brakar that turns out to be a shy, bright 8-year-old girl. So, wow, lots of good names in there that I probably massacred and will regret saying those in about a year.
Right. Well, we have to start someplace. But we also have got some more stuff from Prodigy that Craig is going to tell us about.
That's right. And Paramount Plus also released several images of some of the alien worlds that will be featured on Prodigy. We get a glimpse of a desert planet, strange moons, and an alien city, and what seems to be some sort of wreckage or something. The artwork is beautiful and raises our expectations for the show. We have a link to all those images over and at the show notes for episode 94 at thetopicistrek.com.
Excellent.
And they've got a picture of Antelope Canyon in here. That yellowish one with the curvy rocks. You guys don't know Antelope Canyon. It's like on the...
I know what it is.
It's on Earth Porn on the Reddit subreddit like every other day.
This is pretty cool. I'll tell you, I wasn't sure what to expect from the animation. You know, well, you never know because there's a lot of ways they can take it. It's like, you know, you were just talking about Star Wars, The Bad Batch, and along with that, the Clone Wars, all that animated stuff, I thought turned out really good for what the look it was going for. And so I was pleasantly surprised with that. And I think this is going to be the same way. This looks pretty good.
And it's nice that it's not the same approach that they're taking with Lower Decks, that we're getting something completely different.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as they don't have, since it's young adult featured, I hope it, you know, it's not like it'll be like Rugrats, though.
No,
it's not young adult.
I just.
Oh, it's adult.
Well, this show is scheduled, you know, after it's on Paramount Plus, is scheduled for Nickelodeon. And it is, admittedly, they said it's aimed at a much younger audience because they're trying to get to, you know, kids much younger to get their interest in the show. So I think the best we can hope for is not to talk down to the younger crowd, that the shows won't probably be as complex as other Trek. But as long as you're not talked down to, I don't think that that's going to be a bad thing.
Well, I'm looking forward to it either way. So I'm sorry.
Looking forward to the merchandising. Oh, yeah. Well, one of those blobs, you know, it's like silly putty, but it's clear. It's great.
Prodigy the flamethrower.
Prodigy the bath mat.
Prodigy and finally, the action figure.
I should wait till they
live long and prosper. Adorable. Okay, we are off track again.
I'll be over here in the corner. Oh, you're done. Okay, great. And finally, in Subspace Chatter, we have some news out of Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
Again.
On June 20th, the Vulcan County Health and Wellness Foundation, along with Leonard Nimoy's daughter, Julie Nimoy, and his son-in-law, David Knight, announced the Remembering Leonard Nimoy Wellness Academy. This online platform and community will seek to educate and aid people around the world on the issues of lung disease. Leonard Nimoy, as you may recall, suffered from COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, a condition that led to his untimely death in 2015. The Academy was launched alongside a state-of-the-art facility in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada, which was built by the Vulcan County Health and Wellness Foundation.
Nice.
Beyond upholding Leonard Nimoy's legacy and continuing his quest to bring awareness to respiratory disease and prevention, the brand new Remembering Leonard Nimoy Wellness Academy website, shortened to simply RLNWA.com, will also be home to what they've called the Logic Library. The Logic Library offers rich media resources, education, prevention plans, and community tools to help anyone live long and prosper.
Adorable.
The Vulcan County Health and Wellness Foundation is actively seeking donations and sponsorships to the Remembering Leonard Nimoy Wellness Academy to support preventative health programming and wellness plans for the digital platform. If you would like to support the mission or find out more information, visit rlnwa.com. And of course, we have a link to the website over in the show notes for episode 94 over at thetopicistrek.com. Ooh, we got two dings in one paragraph.
Wow. We're blowing the budget tonight.
That is a mouthful. Remembering Leonard Nimoy Wellness Academy.
Right. It's one of those times that you wish you could have made it a military like anachronism out of it, that it ran off the tongue better, but it's RLNWA. But I'm sure if you also put in search for Remembering Leonard Nimoy Wellness Academy, you'll get the website there as well. All right. Now that's a lot of stories we've covered. And we have a lot more to discuss in the episode, believe me, a lot more about a two-part episode we just watched, but we also have 58 additional stories in the show notes for episode 94. Exactly, Eric. You said it. And this covers everything, the series, the movies, and other categories. And you'll find stories on everything from an article that explains why Kirk and Uhura's kiss wasn't the first interracial kiss on TV, to information on a new Trek documentary series featuring Gates McFadden, to Mego's announcement of a 14-inch Gorn figure.
Good Lord.
Exactly. Still not Gorn-sized, but he's getting much bigger.
He's growing.
So we have links to all that. By the way, when I was tweeting something about that the other day, someone, I can't remember the actor's name now, which is bad, but this is thing off the top of my head. The actor who was in the suit.
Yeah. Doing that scene,
he does guided tours of Vasquez Rocks.
Really?
Is he still in the suit when he does the tours?
He has the head with him.
Okay, for an extra $50, you can fight me.
That's right. Yeah, but you got to do it in slow motion.
Nobody can understand what he says on the tours. That's
right. I guess in better news, when you go on the tour, you can find diamonds laying on the ground. So that's good. You know, that's good.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, before we move on, I can't remember if we talked about this or not, but I know we mentioned the Nichelle Nichols movie, Woman in Motion, that was coming on Paramount Plus. Yes. Did you guys watch that? Or the documentary, rather?
Yes.
Woman in Motion?
I thought we talked about it as well. Yes, I did watch it, and it was excellent.
Yes, it was excellent. There were a lot of aspects that I knew about but never really got into that deep. You know, you knew she was with NASA, but... Holy smokes. Yeah. She recruited a lot of cool people.
Well, she got her hands dirty, so to speak. She did the astronaut training. So she knew how to sell the whole program, which that blew my mind. So, you know, I had this much respect for her, and then now we got any more because, like, as you said, it filled in a lot of blanks that I was not aware of.
It also gives you know, and I hope young people are paying attention, that your career may not always end up where you think it will. She wanted to be a singer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Edward James almost wanted to be a baseball player. Yeah. So there you have it.
Don't be afraid to get off the ranch and follow life's, you know, trails.
Take up a good challenge. You never know. Think of how many lives she's changed.
Yeah. Just look at where Clinton ended up. Yeah. Oh, wait. He's with us. No,
bad example. Bad example.
Your career just never really ended up where you wanted it, where you thought it was going to be, did you?
Well, you know, that's what I expected. So, see, it did end up where I wanted it.
That's right.
Well, it's time for my favorite part of Subspace Chatter, and that's saying we're done with it. So goodbye, Charlie.
I want to stay.
I want to let that linger.
He's got good timing.
Yes, but it's just, it's so wonderful.
I want to put reverb on him.
Double reverb.
But now it's time to head out on our main mission.
Can we do that again with reverb? It's just so much fun. I have
We're gonna say goodbye to Charlie a second time. I'm all in on that one. Go for it.
I want to stay.
Oh, that's musical.
A little feedback in there, sounded like.
That's musical. Okay, and where were we going? Main mission? Sound effect?
Main mission. So we need a sound effect for that one.
We're scanning for a sound effect, apparently.
Okay.
There's no intelligent life here. We're out.
Oh, batteries ran out.
Oh, man, I hate when that happens. We should go to solar on these things. Anyway.
You didn't charge your tricorder before we came down?
Crankable tricorders.
Static. Come on, static. Let's go. Anyway, this time around, we're about to head out on our first ever series rewatch. That's right.
Did you just wake up someone's Apple smart assistant? You said series.
Oh, well, I hope I didn't say that, Alexa. Anyway.
Okay, Google.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Shut up.
We got them all covered now? All right, we're good.
You've got headphones on, Craig. It can't hear you.
Oh, it did.
Can't hear me.
And we're going to begin where it all started. And no, I'm not talking about Star Trek, the original series. That would be too easy. We're talking about Enterprise. Literally just Enterprise. There was no Star Trek before the title when this show premiered.
And they sang in the intro back in the days when musicals were cool.
No, that's not why they did this. But anyway.
Exactly.
All right. So let's start with some information, some background on this two-parter.
Okay. This is called Broken Bow. And if you watch it on Paramount Plus or wherever, it'll say Broken Bow Part 1 and 2. So it was written by series creators Rick Berman and Brandon Braga, both seasoned Trek writers and producers. However, you knew there was a however coming.
Yeah.
It's important to note here that Brandon is on record as stating he never had any love for Star Trek, the original series.
Hmm.
This is a blind spot that will become very apparent as the series goes on. Music was by Dennis McCarthy, who also wrote the main theme to Deep Space Nine, as well as the music for Star Trek Generations, many episodes of TNG, DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise, as well as the music for both Las Vegas Star Trek The Experience Rides, which we're going on. Mm-hmm. He did not write the show's main theme, Where My Heart Will Take Me. That was an existing piece of music written by acclaimed songwriter Diane Warren and performed by Russell Watson. Watson's vocals mimic those of the original performer Rod Stewart.
It's been a long time.
Anyway, no, that'd be Bruce Springsteen.
He's more like Harvey Firestein, actually, more than that.
Sounds like one of those Bud Light commercials.
Rod
Hey!
Okay, it is possible that McCarthy's Archer's theme heard during the end credits of all but these two episodes was originally intended as the main theme, as it runs the exact same 1 minute, 21 seconds.
Wow.
As the edited version of Where My Heart Will Take Me. We have to think, we have a link to a fan created video that replaced Warren's song with McCarthy's end theme. Oh, I want to watch that, but not right now. We're in the middle of recording.
Yes, we're in the middle of talking, so it's probably a
bad time. Focus, Charles.
The two-part episode was directed by veteran TNG, DS9, and Voyager director James L. Conway. Enterprise premiered on September 26, 2001, on the United Paramount Network. Oh, remember good old UPN.
Remember when?
The ratings for... You know, I don't have to work as hard to sound like the old guy anymore.
I know. You became the old man.
Every year.
The young man.
Every year at Dragon Con, less makeup to be Farnsworth. I'm going to be 164 before you know it.
That's right.
The ratings for this two-part episode and the subsequent first few episodes led executives believe Enterprise had the potential to run for 7 years, as had been the pattern with TNG, DS9, and Voyager.
So here's a brief synopsis. The year is 2151, nearly 100 years since Earth has made its first contact with Vulcans. Humans have not ventured beyond the solar system. Captain Jonathan Archer convinces his superior that the USS Enterprise in X-01 would take on the responsibility of returning a wounded Klingon warrior to the planet Kronos. The Vulcans, who have been both aiding and hampering Earth's efforts to begin exploring space, object to Archer's plan. They insist on having a Vulcan on board the mission. What none of them realize is that the mysterious figure from the future orchestrated the attack.
Dun, dun, dun. And a few fun facts to get us going here. Though these are not as fun as sometimes they've been, but several of the guest character names were invented as homages to Star Trek, the original series. These consist of Admiral Forrest, named after DeForest Kelly, Admiral Leonard Nimoy, Commander William Shatner, and TOS, the common abbreviation for the original series. The farmer at the beginning of the episode is named Moore after Ronald D. Moore. The real-life sisters who portrayed the butterfly dancers had to endure being wrapped in 7 layers of foul-smelling latex.
We haven't heard that before.
Yeah, one of them who played the blue dancer passed out and vomited during... Well, she was wearing
all those butterflies all over the floor regurgitated. That's nasty. My goodness.
Now, talk about bad timing. I think Enterprise, you know, had a lot of timing things, but the episode score composed by Dennis McCarthy, as Chuck has already mentioned, was recorded on September 10th and September 11th, 2001.
That's cutting it pretty close.
Well, September 11th.
11th? Yeah, that's also...
Right, but the show aired 10 days later.
Yes, but again, September 11th. You want to go into the recording studio on that day? They were given the option to, you know, postpone, but McCarthy and the orchestra decided to continue with the schedule. McCarthy later described this in the liner notes to the episode soundtrack release as the hardest recording session of my entire career.
I can imagine why. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is some, like I said, some of those fun facts. I'm going, well, they're significant, but fun. I'm not sure it's fun in those cases. All right. We have a lot to talk about with this. I think mainly because we're trying to cover two things here. One, just the concept of the series and our initial thoughts going into it, as well as the two episodes themselves. So I want to leave this as free-flowing as we have normally, but start off on some of the basic premises of the show. We're starting off. These are the real first voyages of the Starship Enterprise. This is NX-01 Enterprise. And the way it looks, what's happening in the story, how the interaction between humans and Vulcans, meeting other races. I'm going to throw one thing out here to start things off as just a point that gets back to, do you the care or not care about the original series? The Klingons looked like the original series Klingons, you know, from the motion picture onward.
The horseshoe crab.
Right. So we have this, you're now like isolating the original series as the only thing that has those looking Klingons, with the exception, as we know, of something far later in Enterprise.
Yeah.
But I was a bit disappointed in seeing that's the way the Klingons looked.
I really thought I looked past it. I went, okay, Klingon. For all I know, there's different variants of Klingons. So I just went, oh, Klingon.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think I remember it's been a long time. It's been a long time.
Don't do it.
Since the first time I saw it, of course, But I remember thinking, okay, he's got the head. I just kind of looked past it because I figured they didn't have the makeup to do it back then. They're doing it now, and that's just the way the Klingons are supposed to look. I don't know. I would
rather have had a hybrid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, I agree with you. I think it makes more sense to either make them look more like make them look like TOS ones, or a hybrid or something like that. I mean, it makes more sense.
Maybe what they're wearing is a bit more like TOS, even if they're looking like.
Well, he just didn't need the head. He could just be a dark skinned guy, you know. You know how they looked. You were there.
I was there on set every day. Well, I think that one of the things was obviously a practical consideration, especially when you consider that in the second part of this episode, you have to go to Kronos. And so you have lots of people, and they go, well, we've got lots of these Klingon outfits hanging around. So they're going to look like the thing we have the outfits for. So I think some of that was very practical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this.
Well,
this,
I thought it was funny when they showed up on Klingon or Kronos, excuse me. All the Klingons look like they did when Picard was there, you know.
Yeah,
it really didn't change a lot.
Well, you know, the Grand Hall doesn't change too much in terms of the set. So,
yeah,
right.
No, yeah. I mean they all. I mean, I understand that, but I mean the Klingons themselves look like they could have been from TNG, or
they probably
from DS9, or yeah, they probably right. were.
Even though it's supposed to be 100 years difference.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was getting at. So
more than 100 years.
Look, imagine what you were wearing back in the '80s and now. So would you wear?
I do wear that stuff. That's what's in my closet. That's what I wear all the time. It's sad. It's very sad. But
at this age, I don't buy new clothes, Craig. That's just kind of a thing. Donna gets me the occasional Hawaiian shirt from Goodwill, so I can at least fit in here in Phoenix.
Right.
So please donate to the podcaster nearest you. Anyway,
So I didn't worry too much about it, but I understand. It makes sense what you said, and I would have probably rather have them regular Klingons, but
you know, I mean these I
or TOS
you eventually have to look past it, but I just that initial view of them, because there's so many things to process in the show about the way it looks, again, in comparison to where we know we end up.
Yeah.
You know, that.
What did you show up, look at it and go, he's a time traveling Klingon. He's from the future.
No, we have time travel later on in this thing, so I didn't have to worry too much about that. What did you guys think about having a theme song that wasn't even recorded specifically for, that wasn't created for the show and had lyrics?
Honestly, I don't mind the song by itself. I minded it on the show. It didn't feel right.
I minded it a lot more back then. I find it tolerable now.
Yeah, well, I agree with that.
I must have mellowed in my age.
Yeah, I agree with that.
What I found interesting about it was that getting past the actual song itself, you have all these images, and clearly, to me, the intent is to show a progression.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they bounce around all over the place. It's not in order of any, I mean, it's in really, really, really rough order, but you go from like the moon landing back to breaking the sound barrier, then jumping to the space.
Amelia Earhart.
And bouncing back to Amelia Earhart. It's like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
The director dropped the sketches on the floor when they were putting the panels.
I got the timeline.
Yeah, they're roughly floor. In kind of order. These ones, I think, were near the top, and these ones were near the bottom, and that's going to be good.
Does anybody remember what came first, sound barrier or moon? I don't know.
I think the sailing ship Enterprise came first. Or I think.
Okay, we'll start with that. We'll start with that.
Yeah,
I'm with you though, Chuck. It probably bothered me early on a lot more, but now watching it now, I don't really.
I don't think I ever listened to it more than once before, because you know you take the TiVo and you go.
Well, now I got Netflix. I can skip the intro.
Yeah, but we're watching it on
now,
UPN.
Yeah, we're not. UPN doesn't have that yet.
No.
And we start off with a flashback to Archer's childhood. I can't recall, jumping ahead a bit because it's been a while since I've rewatched the series. Do we see any references after Broken Bow to the father-son relationship? Those characters?
I'm trying to remember. Was there an episode where he actually interacted with his dad, or his dad had some to do? Because his dad was instrumental in helping build the warp engine.
Right.
And so I thought there was an episode where, you know, somehow he was involved. I can't remember.
I'm just wondering, because it plays a part, not a huge part in the story. I mean, you're using it kind of as a anchor to say, this is what he had hoped would happen, but he never lived to see it. Mm-hmm. Because of those darn Vulcans.
Yeah, it gave a little more motivation to Archer's character. Is you're still holding us back after 100 years?
Yeah.
You stuck it to my dad. You're not going to stick it to me.
What did we think about the Vulcans being portrayed as not necessarily the most helpful of races?
I think it lent some depth to the Vulcan character. That they are logical, they are cautious, they are scientific, and here's this race of emotional, unruly people, which is like, we're not going to let them, you know, run roughshod all over the
But they the do galaxy. For 100 years. Yeah. Well, because I'm wondering, they've gone out exploring, clearly. Well, they weren't specifically looking for Earth, though, because they just have, you know.
Oh, that's true. Because Meriwether, right, was running around with them Mayweather. He was on ships that were going to different places. So he was bringing some experience in with him. So we have been out of the solar system.
Yeah, he was a boomer, and that we have that strange scene. I always thought of it as a strange scene. I'm rewatching it. It didn't
sitting on the ceiling
that much. Sitting on the ceiling.
Oh, like, yeah.
A lot of time was spent on that scene, and I don't think it ever really paid off as anything.
No.
Only to show that he was comfortable in the space travel thing, and he was to kind of, and Tucker was not necessarily comfortable, but didn't understand. Oh, there's a spot in every spaceship, you know, just kind of learning the ropes a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. They brought Tucker's ignorance out again. When that woman was trying to wean her son off of, you know, what was it? Methyl dioxide or something. You know, to get him to breathe. And he didn't understand the situation, and his preconceived notions got the better of him, which, you know, T'Pol put him in his place. Like, hey, you know, stop jumping to conclusions until you understand the situation objectively. So we got that. I don't know that we necessarily needed the talk about the women with the three. You know.
Yeah, I wanted to. I had a note here about that. I'm trying to figure out, what is the fascination in your pilot, other than to say, hey, more of this might be coming up, to have these scenes on these Las Vegas type planets, or to have the scantily clad women, because we had it in this, we had it in the original pilot for Star Trek, you know, the Orion slave girls. We also, to shift genres a bit, it's a switch shows a bit, original Battlestar Galactica, in the first 2 hour, you know, of the show, the first planet they get to is one of these Vegas planets with the women with the stuff. It's like, hey, why? You know,
even in space, sex sells.
I guess.
And they're trying to get people to go to Vegas.
Well, you know what's funny is you bring this up about even on the show Enterprise. I always had a problem with the soft porn sex scenes that they had, you know, in the decontamination chamber.
Oh, the gels.
Oh, boy.
I'm like, if that is not.
I'm not surprised Craig didn't pick. I'm not surprised Craig brought that one up.
Yeah, I'll be in my bunk. Seriously, the first time I saw it, I was like, okay, wow, they're really focusing on moving the camera in certain areas. I'm like, they're doing this super on purpose. And
absolutely.
Trying to sell Star Trek with sex just kind of doesn't offend me. I don't know the right. It's weird. That's what I meant. It's weird.
Vulcans are hot.
Well, it's become the
sign me up to the Vulcan Space Science Academy.
Keep your emotions in check, Mr. Steph.
I'll try to keep a straight face. I was sweating. A little, I'm sweating.
Yeah. I think that to Paul's character, I like the fact that she kind of, I wouldn't say switched loyalties, but, you know, did quote unquote the right thing with the mission. It almost felt too easy, though. It felt like that maybe that should have, we should have held off for a few episodes that happened immediately.
I thought her and Archer kind of came to terms a little too quickly. You know, get out there and make yourself useful. So then she made herself useful and everything is cool. Like,
in that first episode, but when you, as soon as I actually let the second episode start and you can see where she had an attitude like, oh, not everybody's like that. You shouldn't be doing that. And he's like, are you with me or not? You know, so it wasn't exactly an easy road, so to speak.
And I suppose they did need to resolve that conflict so that they could get her to stay on board.
Right.
By the end of the second show.
Yeah. So, yeah, she was. I think she was trying to find that happy medium between what Trip wanted. And what she wanted, and that's what they were trying to do. So that's how they resolved it. But yeah, the second episode, we'll talk about it again next time. It's like you could see where she was giving them attitude, which is another thing about the Vulcans. Not only were they, you mentioned about the Vulcans a moment ago, they were giving a lot of emotional attitude, I think a little too much, enough where you go, oh, well, they're emoting through the screen a lot more than, you know, Spock did. Because they were telling him, it seemed like they were smug. You know, we were like, we know better.
Well, even at the beginning, when Archer said, no, we're going to bring this Klingon back. And
Saval
went, you can't do that.
Oh, is that?
When logic doesn't work, you raise your voice.
Yeah. He called him out. That's right. But no, I did like the dynamic that they gave the Vulcans in here because they did give it a little depth. And, you know, not a villain, but they, you know, gave them a little friction for what's going on. You know, what they're trying to do.
I mean, it's conflict. And I think that it walks a fine line. I don't think it always stays on the right side of it, but you're trying to walk that fine line of, well, they are your allies. They're not like out to destroy you or something like that. They just don't trust you a whole lot.
Right.
Yeah.
They're advisors that.
And by friction, I mean, like, you know, you just don't jump in a ship and go into space like Han Solo, you know, just
like
take
Jeff
off.
Bezos.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, on the flip side, okay, so Earth just went through the trouble to build this ship. Now you don't want us to take it anywhere? Yeah, come on.
So. Right. And, you know, it's been like 100 years. We've already flown one of these things, you know. Back
Franklin?
Well, no, the Phoenix. We flew a missile with a couple of nacelles taped on it.
Yeah, the Franklin tape. The Franklin is a weird thing in here because when we talked about, you know, Star Trek Beyond in the last episode, definitely you can see the look of that ship kind of jives a bit with the look of the NX-01.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But doesn't Scotty say in there that the Franklin is the first ship to travel at warp 4. And in the pilot here, they're talking about they've already done warp 4 and are
going for 5.
4.5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So I don't know. Cause
we are talking about Kelvin timeline.
We are talking about Star Trek writers.
Well, no, we're not. We're talking about Kelvin timeline, but remember the stuff that takes place in Enterprise
is pre
would be both timelines.
Yeah.
Because it's not till Spock,
the prime line,
crosses over. So that's after Kirk's time and everything. It's just
no.
Yes, I would say it was a common timeline at that point. You don't just because Spock came back, you don't have a different past.
Wait, hear me out. So whether or not you go into that timeline, the Kelvin timeline always existed. There was things going on. It's just that we didn't see it until Spock showed up.
All right, but
so it was always there. So things happen.
But that goes against the premise that they give. I know we're talking about Star Trek Beyond now, but it's still a topic of Trek. Spock specifically says in the, I'm sorry, Zachary Quinto Spock says that it, and they also say on Discovery that the creation of that timeline was due to the incursion of a Romulan mining vessel. So that that timeline did not exist until
Nero came through
that event. And that's the fork at that point.
Okay.
So my point was that I know that they did research on Memory Alpha when they're trying to come up with all the facts. It just seemed odd that they didn't choose like warp 5 instead of warp 4, something like that.
Just yeah.
Kind of leapt out at me as strange. What do we think about future, lack of a better term, I'll call him Future Man in this? Was that a necessary element? Was that one too many things going on in your pilot? Or
it was too many.
No, I think it was a good driver for the Suliban and what they were doing and why, which we don't know, really. It's just somebody's giving them direction from the future. It felt very Section 31-ish.
Yeah.
We don't know who it was. And in a pilot, that gives you the feeling of we can expect more from this character. We can expect more from this, you know, future director. Maybe not every episode, maybe not even right away, but we'll see that again. So that's what I'm counting on.
I didn't care for the Suliban, to be honest with you.
Oh, I never did either. But, you know, I forgot that they show up in the first episode. I thought they came out long first after. Scene.
Yeah. So I didn't care for the Suliban at any point in this whole series. But Future Man, I was like, you know, I don't know. It just seems like they were setting up too much of like a big arc, which I think I would have been more happy just them doing a story of the week, trying to learn about all these characters and instead of trying to have some overarching thing, at least early on.
Well, especially when you're trying to grapple with, you know, this other race to begin with, and then to have that other race having someone else influence them to do what they're doing. Yeah. It's like, okay, now I don't know anything about this race, and there's something on top of that that I'm trying to figure out at the same time.
Yeah. So what did you think?
I felt like it was just one too many things that I would be happy if that was pushed to the second episode, that you find out, you think you know what's going on, and then you find out that there's somebody controlling it from the future. It seemed like we find that out very early on.
Oh, you're saying it was too early in this pair.
Yeah, too much going at first.
Well,
yeah.
In these, I don't even know if it should have been in Broken Bow anyplace.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, you assume you know what's going on because the Suliban are trying to do something, trying to cause instability in the Klingon Empire. Then, when you think you know what's going on, when you've had a chance to digest that for an episode or two, then you get introduced to Future Man. Wait a minute, they're not even the people that are behind this. There's somebody else controlling all this. What's the story with that? So I think
that could have worked, but yeah.
You need a bit of time to get it. I was also interested, one of the things that's, I didn't remember this being an issue with me in the first time I watched this episode, but why could no one find the damn shuttle on that planet? Oh, it's over here. No, it's over there. No, it's over the other place. And just really, everybody remember where we parked. What's so hard about this?
Yeah, it was snowing.
Yeah, right.
Did you go down the same elevator you came up? I don't know.
Also, Chuck, did something else leap out at you because it leapt out at me? I've seen lightning in a snowstorm before.
Yes. Yes, I have.
Oh, yeah, I have. I too. It blew my mind the first time I saw it.
It was a way to comment on, I don't recognize that there's phaser fire going on over there.
What could that be? I have no idea. I don't know. But the ship was obviously well constructed because they got away with barely a scratch, just a little bit of dinging. And how did they solve the big problem? Ladies and gentlemen, say it with me. It's a magical term. They reversed
the polarity.
Maybe that should be our new closing thing. We can no longer put on the red shirt. Don't reverse the polarity.
I had to roll my eyes.
Yes. At that. And there was at least several mentions of some kind of. So
yes.
Yeah.
The first
drinking
the
first game scene. Continues.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh my goodness. My goodness. So that's mostly my notes on it. I mean, I believe that we're going to have to pay really strict attention to Future Man, because that storyline kind of peters and skips and starts, and kind of, we may have to make up our own story about that as Enterprise goes along.
That's right.
Because it seems
it was Picard.
It was Picard. I believe that I'd have to look to see if I'm remembering this correctly. Does anyone else recall that? Was it Scott Bakula that said that it was Archer in the future, which doesn't make any sense to me at all. But I remember hearing that quote from him. I have to look that up, because believe me,
let's look that up, because that sounds vaguely familiar, but I can't say for
certain. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how to look for it. So I will check for that. The next time Future Man comes up, we can talk about it. And he will come up again in fairly short order.
Next episode.
possibly.
Yeah, maybe.
He'll come back again and again and again, because he's Future Man.
He is. And I call him that because what else are you going to call him? He's a man from the future. All right. Any other thoughts on the first two episodes of Enterprise Broken Bow, which I thought was really amusing, because your lead is Archer and your show is called Broken Bow. So go figure that one out.
Where's the rim shot when you need it?
Yeah. I will say this. I think that, since it's the first episode, let's talk about a moment about the aesthetic of the show, the design,
yes.
Which I really liked the way the ship was laid out. I liked the control panel, everything. It looked very pre, TOS, mm-hmm. as in somewhere a mix between like a shuttle, the space shuttle, and, Starfleet.
Somewhere starships. Between Captain Proton's ship.
Yeah, that's right. And they had, they had LCD screens, which, at the time was probably pretty expensive.
Right.
But I liked it. And I also liked how they were very timid to use the
transporter.
Yeah. Sorry, Captain. We had to use it.
And he pats himself an awful lot. It's like, am I okay?
Why is my leg up here?
Yeah, exactly. You'll get used to it. It's fine.
Like Spaceballs. Backwards.
See, yeah. But that's another thing, is that it took their trepidation about using the transporter. Took that out as a plot device that we've seen 100 times, before. Just, let's just beam in, sight to sight, whatever.
Right.
They didn't use that for a long time. Or even the tractor beam. There was no tractor beam. They used the cables.
Grappling hook. It was Batman.
That's right.
You think the grappler might work at this distance?
Which the first time I remember when I saw that originally, I remember going, wow, they're old school, big time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They latch onto it and the guy ejects.
It's like Indiana Jones reaches out with the whip and pulls it in.
I appreciate the fact that in this instance, the jumpsuits looked like jumpsuits.
Yes.
It looked like a flight jumpsuit.
These guys could have just walked off of an aircraft carrier.
I can't look at those uniforms without thinking of our buddy Gary Lindros.
That's right.
He's got one.
So, yeah, I think that you have the obvious problems that you can only go so backwards to make it look younger than TOS. And I think that given those, those constraints, that a lot of the choices that they made, making it look very industrial, very, I wouldn't say cobbled together, but just very purpose built.
This wasn't Christmas wrapping paper.
Right. Right. There was no fluff. I mean, the captain's quarters were the size of, Kirk's bathroom. And when he had a dog with him, to share that space. So,
yeah. When that Doug Drexler did a lot of that design. Mm-hmm. I know there are others, but I remember he put some designs up for our alternative designs if the show had continued, of what the NX-01 was going to look like, and it would have ended up having a fuselage a little more like the Enterprise we know as they refit it as the show went on. So that'd have been cool to see. But
give it a neck.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, they would have dropped it down and put a fuselage in it. Yeah, the designs were pretty cool. And you could see where it looked similar to the Enterprise we know and love, but not quite, you know. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense, which is the way to go with it.
Well, we need to get him on the show.
It's got you got to remember Discovery is a low profile ship too. So in that respect, NX-01 and Discovery are kind of similar in their designs.
It's just that one of the nacelles on Discovery is what, like three times the length of NX-01?
Yeah, probably.
Just a wee bit bigger. All right. Well, we're going to have to rate this one, and I'm going to give it a scale of 1 to 10 Chinese meals that Phlox seems to love.
1 to 10 osmotic eels, which rhymes with Chinese meals.
That's right.
Don't put osmotic eels in your Chinese meals.
No, that's the egg drop soup is going to have a whole new meaning when you do that. All right. So who would like to start with the ratings?
I'll go.
Okay.
I enjoyed this. It was a fun throwback 20 years to go rewatch the show. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would, because I kind of remember Enterprise as getting a little tiresome after a while, but this was a nice refresher. They brought on a lot of information to introduce us to a familiar world, but yet in a fresh new way. Everything from the Klingot. You know, yes. People didn't even know how to pronounce that. We met the crew in a build up kind of order. It's like, oh, there's Phlox working on the Klingon. He didn't really seem like he belonged there, but suddenly you're hired. And I really did enjoy it. I'm going to give this, I'm wavering between a 7.5 and an 8. I'm going to go with an 8.
Okay. That's 7 osmotic eel Chinese meals. And I say that 3 times fast.
With the kung pao.
Exactly. I think I've had that before.
And the egg drop soup. And I'm going to agree with a lot of what Chuck said. It's been quite a while since I did a rewatch of Enterprise. And I was kind of nervous about it because I know we're going to go through the entire series.
Yeah.
And I said, well, if I don't really like it from square one on a rewatch, this is going to be a long rewatch, but I did enjoy it. And I, as you said, I think a lot of the characters get introduced in interesting ways. I like the way that they get,
Hoshi
Sato.
Yes.
You know, hooked in on it. Oh, listen to this language.
Yeah. You want to be the first person to talk to these people. Yeah,
come on. You know, you want to. So I'm going to give it a little lower, but I'm going to give it a 7.
The students are still there in Brazil going,
yes, click. Waiting.
Lee click. Is she coming back? Lee click.
Yeah. No, that's it.
Yeah. I will give this show a solid 8. And the reason I like the way that everything looks like a throwback a little bit. You know, like I mentioned it before, the ship looks a little bit older in design. They go through a lot of the growing pains that you would normally not think about until we were introduced to it with Starfleet starting off. Even with Trip, you know, freaking out because he thought that woman was suffocating her own child, you know, and trying to learn how they fit into all these other worlds, yeah. You know, where their place. So things like that, the Vulcans giving them a hard time. I think this was a little bit deeper, or you know, a little bit, it had some depth to the world that we know and love. So yes, I thought it was great. I give it a solid 8.
And the gel scene.
Yes.
Oh, 8.5. Hey baby.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
Oh, oh my. My.
I like, by the way, I liked they were watching the strippers and Captain, we need to, or Lieutenant, we need to go. And he's like, yeah, you're right. We need to go. You know, when they were,
are those, he had to pull those butterflies or holograms?
That's right. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, we're going to move on now quickly to our warp speed roundtable. So an appropriate sound effect. All right, sounds good, because that's what we got. Last time around, we asked, what TOS era character would you like to see return in the next Trek film? And we got lots of responses to this one. So apparently it's something that people think about or intrigue them. Listener Diane wrote in to say, Lieutenant Leslie, no. Lieutenant Kyle, no, no. So there goes our, there go ours. The one, the only choice, my friends, is the fabulous, the OG space kitten with claws, savvy and smart, Yeoman Janice Rand, drop mic.
When she said kitten with claws, I expected to say Amorous.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was too. I was like, Okay.
Carl replied, the Doomsday Machine homeworld and whatever that world brings with it. Very ominous.
Is that a character? Is the Doomsday Machine a character? I guess if the Enterprise is a character, then sure, the big space slug can be a character. Well,
we don't know if it, we don't know that it wasn't intelligent.
The Enterprise was at one point. Remember, it got smart.
So, look how that worked out.
Yeah, well.
Well, Enterprise D did.
Remember, I agree with Diane. Yeoman Rand would be an awesome character to bring back.
It would be an interesting character to bring back because you really would have to do a lot of reimagining on who that character is.
Yeah, they didn't really flesh it out.
Well, later in her career, she wasn't always a yeoman either.
Right, right. She appeared in three when the Enterprise is coming back into the space dock. She's looking at it, just shaking her head.
Right. Yeah.
And she's also, I believe, in six.
I thought she was in six. She's also
at Starfleet headquarters. Yep. She's in six. All righty. And who else do we have?
Carl. Carl, you did Carl.
Yeah. Ken answered with Sulu. Now, although Sulu is already in the new movies, well, perhaps he means Prime Sulu. That could be the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Proez said Trelane now that he's all grown up. So that could be
I was just having some fun.
Talk about your mirror universe. Don't do
no,
that.
No, mirror.
Gary wants Dr. Richard Daystrom to return. I assume he means the sane Dr. Daystrom?
No, the old one who played Blackula from the 60s.
Oh, all right.
M5. I love you, M5.
We want the crazy Daystrom, apparently. That's what Chuck wants. We know that's what Gary wants, but that's what Chuck wants to have happen. All right, and this time around, I'm asking, which ship's doctor is your favorite?
All right, let's go down the roster. We have McCoy,
mm-hmm.
Crusher.
Mm-hmm.
Are we counting?
Counting who?
No, the second season, Diane Muldar.
Yes, Pulaski.
Pulaski, yes, I knew it started with a P. It was just having a blank. So there's Pulaski. We've got Bashir. We've got Phlox. We've got EMH. We've got, who am I missing? Lots.
Well, you have Discovery that you haven't hit.
Oh, I haven't hit Discovery. Yes, Culber.
And the other doctor on the show. We also
going with Lower Decks doctor.
Well, the Lower Decks, I don't think have we.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yes. We have. Of course we have. Of course we have of course we have. Silly me.
He was just on Pod Directive.
I was trying to picture the medical bay at that point. There's also the doctor in the pilot.
Yeah, Dr. Philip Boyce.
Okay. So we have lots of them to go with. I'm going to go up, toss out first, because I thought he had the most interesting bedside manner. We only saw him occasionally, Dr. Mbenga from the original series, the one who slaps Spock around to get him out of
the bed. One we said nobody would know.
Dr. Mbenga. What was Odo's first caretaker? You know who I'm talking about. The guy who turned him from a dish of goo into
that was
on DS9.
Trying to intimidate him to stand up. Do this, do that.
Right. I'll shock you again. That's who I'm after.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Okay.
I'm going to find it real quick.
Yeah. I just felt like Mbenga, he seemed to know an awful lot about these alien cultures. And if we take slapping Spock around, yep. Yeah, okay. I'll do that. You know, want to, you know, go along with the stuff that needed to get done to make things happen. What about you? Well, that's being researched.
Dr. Maura Pohl.
Okay. So Chuck wants shock therapy. I want to be slapped around. Chuck wants shock therapy.
Top that, Craig.
What about you, Craig?
He's sweet on the redhead. He was Dr. Crusher.
No, I'll go for Pulaski.
And then he laughs. Somebody out there hates you right now.
You just want that smarmy, huh? You just want that.
No,
talk back.
No, I'm gonna go for a good one here. I'm gonna go for Voyager, the Doctor.
No,
or hologram.
What about Geordi? You can't change Geordi's girlfriend.
You can't change your voice now, huh?
Geordi's girlfriend, the holodeck, the warp theorist.
Was she? I guess she was a doctor.
She was a doctor.
In title, yeah.
What? They had to be like a physical doctor or a PhD doctor.
Well, he didn't
doctor.
Say he didn't pick a physical doctor. He picked the emergency medical hologram.
Right. That's right. Hey, well, look, I like the doctor because he went from being just a hologram to being a full-fledged run, walking around, you know, interacting with everybody, leaving the ship, doing things.
I thought you were going to like him because if you didn't agree with his diagnosis, turn him off. You just say end program. And that would
No, I just pull the plug. But no, I thought he was great.
Emitter, thank you very much.
Yeah. Yes. No, I thought he was great. You know, so,
all right.
Yeah.
Sure, there you go. Picking the non-obscure one. Good work, Craig.
Okay, fine.
Dr. Leah Brahms, that's what it was. I didn't even find it on the search.
Yeah, that's right. As soon as you said it, I remembered it.
She's my pick.
Although Phlox was pretty cool because he had all these unusual, you know, remedies and things. Like he's putting the starfish on.
That was the osmotic eel.
Yeah, the osmotic eel. Things like that. I thought it was pretty cool.
Did they give him the Joker treatment when he gave her that original smile when he says optimism and his his smile goes up to his ears?
Right. Yeah. I remember seeing that at first when they were running the promos for it before it came on and thinking, oh, that's going to be a cool thing. Isn't that the only time we see that?
I think
happen?
That's the only time because it jumped out at me like, wow.
He may do it again.
He smiles. But I don't think they add that extra effect.
I want to say he may do it again in the series somewhere. But yeah, you're right.
We're going to be in the lookout for that. But
it's a few and far between. But yeah, I remember seeing it, going, wow, okay.
Wait till they get a load of me.
Yeah.
And the thing is,
Captain.
You think about that effect, and you're thinking now, be like, yeah, it's a toss away. We're just going to do that. But then I'm sure it was like, no, that's going to take like a couple of $1,000 and a good afternoon to do that shot.
Yep.
Because we have to warp every bit of this in this program that you can't blink, otherwise it crashes. And now it's just like this really simple thing to do. So that's probably why they only used it very, very sparingly.
We had 45 Silicon Graphics servers running that
overnight, the whole render farm just for that smile. Exactly.
That's right.
All right.
I'm sorry. I like how I was laughing when I said Pulaski.
No love for Dr. Pulaski.
Craig's all over that.
Yeah, well, really. We don't know that's true because we've given our opinions, but you, listener, you might have another doctor who's your Doctor Who, your favorite doctor.
Doctor Who?
Well,
which one?
Well,
I like David Tennant.
No.
Number four. Tom Baker, damn it.
We're not going down that road.
Clinton was around with the first doctor.
Dr. Dre.
I was the first doctor. Anyway. But on Star Trek Doctors, you can let us know who your favorite doctor is. And remember, we also try to before every episode post on the Facebook page a reminder about the question so you can answer it there in that thread, but you can also you know, drop us a note at some other time about it as well. And we will include that in the show.
Did y'all mention Dr. Tiana?
Well, we said that.
Did you say that name? I can't remember.
So the doctor on Lower Decks, and I was trying to picture.
Couldn't remember the name.
Sick Bay.
Tiana.
And then I'm going, wait a minute. Of course, it's the doctor on Lower Decks.
She had some good lines. I do like that doctor though so far.
But you got to think about operating, and is all the fur going to get into that open wound? You got to think about.
Well, they got the exocomp.
Okay. But the exocomp doesn't want to do anything, so it's not going to help you.
I love how she was watching. Oh, good technique. She was checking it.
All right.
All right. But right now it's time to refill the dilithium chamber, or refill the dilithium chamber.
Aretha Franklin? What?
Yeah, exactly. And warp on out of here. You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com. And I figured out how to get some of the voice assistants to play the show. You have to not say so-and-so, play the Comedy Forecast comedy podcast. Just say play Comedy Forecast comedy podcast, and it may work for you, so give that a try.
I tried that with Google early on when they said, oh, we got podcasts, and I couldn't play yours or ours.
Well, maybe it's gotten smarter since then. I just tried this the other like 2 or 3 weeks ago and finally got it to work. So but that was on the Echo, so we'll have to
I'm gonna try it again on Google. Okay. I'm gonna try it now. No, not right now
because it's gonna make things happen. Who speaks for you guys?
Go ahead, Chuck. I'm tired.
You can find us at Technorama Podcast. Just search for that in your favorite search engine. Over at chuckchat.com, you'll find the badge that says Technorama. So we do that show every Sunday. I've been doing it for a very, very, very long time.
Speaking of being tired.
Wow. Well,
just kidding.
On that note, it's time to hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek,
Don't.
Put reverse on
the polarity
shirt, red shirt.
Polarity.
Wow.
Yeah, what? We say that.
We just went into the wrong universe.
Well-oiled machine again. I've got the goatee. I'm in the mirror universe.